Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, another in our series of conversations with the candidates. In 2006, John Olszewski Jr. was 23 years old and teaching high school in Dundalk when he was appointed to fill a vacant seat in the House of Delegates. He won the subsequent election and went on to serve in the House for 9 years. After losing a bid for the state Senate 4 years ago, he's staging a political comeback as the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. In a crowded primary field, Olszewski bested 3 other candidates to emerge as the winner by a margin of only 17 votes. Now, he faces Maryland Insurance Commissioner Al Redmer in the general election. Johnny O joins me in Studio A when Midday starts right after these headlines. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us on this sunny Friday. It's kind of sunny outside, at least where we are. I hope it is with you as well. Today, we continue our series of conversations with the candidates with former state delegate John Olszewski Jr., the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. He won a nail-biter primary, emerging as the winner in a 4-person race by just 17 votes. Mr. Olszewski, known as Johnny O, is running against Republican nominee Al Redmer Jr., the state insurance commissioner, in the upcoming general election. Olszewski is a lifelong resident of Dundalk, a graduate of Sparrows Point High School and Goucher College. He holds a PhD in public policy from UMBC. He was just 23 years old when he was elected to the Maryland House of Delegates, where he served for 9 years. Johnny O celebrated his 36th birthday on Monday. He and his wife, Marisa, have a young daughter. We will take your calls and emails a little later in the show. We're also streaming our conversation live on the WIPR Facebook page. Mr. Olszewski, it's good to see you, sir.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me in.
So lots of issues are hot topics in this race for county executive. Let's start with high schools and the need to build or renovate new schools or some of the schools that are currently under consideration for renovation, certainly. Delaney High School, Lansdowne High School, Towson High School. Each community is making their bid. Each community is saying, you know, this has got to be priority one. Mm-hmm. It's an expensive proposition. What's your approach? We talked a little bit about this when you were on the show the last time, which was last April. So since then to now, has that approach and that and your understanding of this issue evolved? And if so, in what way?
If anything, it's only further affirmed my belief that education needs to be a passion and priority, not just for me, but for Baltimore County. It's very personal for me. I was a first-generation college student who came through the public school system, and it was because of those opportunities that education unlocked the potential of my life. It's why I became a public school teacher in the county. And someone who is a teacher endorsed by teachers, and I'm honored to have the support of the Teachers Association in this general election, but who spent time walking the hallways of our public schools and who uniquely understands that school infrastructure really matters and impacts the learning environment, who understands whether or not a child has been fed a meal impacts their ability to learn. So as it relates to our 3 schools and frankly several others, because there are other schools in need and there are overcrowding challenges we face, but Lansdowne and Delaney and Towson High Schools have been sort of top of mind because they've been on the conversation, but I'm wholly and enthusiastically committed to building 3 new schools. Every student and teacher and family deserves top-notch, world-class educational facilities, and it's an investment. What happens when we don't invest in our schools is we see that residents don't want to move here. They choose to move out, and our property values decline. When we do invest in our schools, residents want to stay, they want to move here, and our property taxes increase. I mean, just by a proof point, I think about it this way. So we actually spend about $2,000 less per pupil in Baltimore County than Howard County and Anne Arundel County. And as a consequence, the average, the median housing value in Baltimore County is about $200,000 less per house than those other jurisdictions. And, you know, you can talk.
And you think there's a direct lineage?
Absolutely. The first question people ask when they're talking about moving to a neighborhood is, what are the schools like? And talking to parents and knocking on literally tens of thousands of doors along with my team and making hundreds of thousands of phone calls. We know that education is the number one issue in Baltimore County, and I believe for voters across the state.
I think very few people would disagree. Mm-hmm. However, last I heard, the estimates to build one school is about $125 million. That's a lot of money. And for three schools, that's, you know, you can do the math. You have a PhD. You're Dr. Olszewski. You can do the math better than me. You know, so where does that money come from? I mean, and is it a matter of taking the money away from something else?
Well, I mean, I think we have to be honest and have honest conversations about these, but there's a pretty broad approach that I would take as county executive, and that starts first and foremost with doing a full audit of efficiencies, waste, fraud, abuse in Baltimore County. In a jurisdiction that has $3.2 billion budget, every 1% of efficiencies we can identify is $32 million in operational savings that we can reinvest in our schools.
Do you have a sense of where those, the waste, fraud, and abuse is like the law firm we hear about every 4 years when there's an election cycle? You know, good morning, waste, fraud, and abuse, how can I help you? But I mean, do you have any idea, specific idea about where there are areas that the county could be more efficient and that there is actually fraud and abuse?
Well, I would leverage my experience in the private sector these last 3 years using big data and analytics so that we're actually tracking outcomes. It was almost 20 years ago that Baltimore City created CityStat, and we still have nothing even resembling that in Baltimore County. So we don't even track our outcomes in terms of where we're spending money. We're not making that public. And so we don't even have, a full handle on where those areas are. And so the first step is actually creating the infrastructure to do that. And I have sort of the professional experience to do that. We do that with state and local governments all the time in my professional life. And I believe that we can get up to 3% of efficiencies and waste in county government. So that's one piece of the puzzle. The other piece is when I was in the legislature and I was the chair of the Baltimore County House delegation, we partnered and supported Baltimore City in their effort in the state legislature to enact a 21st century schools program. The state is now putting forward over $1 billion to build new schools and renovate others for Baltimore City. Similarly, the state actually owes Baltimore County over $200 million in forward-funded dollars that we've put forward to do renovations. And so getting that money back as part of the state partnership and, you know, also just thinking more.
But that money's already been spent.
It's been spent, but the state owes that back to the county something we've forward funded on our obligations and will be able to be reinvested once that money comes back and is due to the county. I also think that we should and can recognize that if we do all of these projects together and earlier, we can get an economy of scale. We also have to be more creative about thinking about what materials we use, how we design an architect, what kind of agreements we enter into to. I think we can build schools more effectively while still meeting the needs of our students and residents. And then again, just by investing, we'll see property values increase, which helps grow our county. And we also have to think about the fact that when we're not maintaining our schools and we're allowing them to decline, there are associated costs with upkeep and maintenance. Energy efficiency is much lower. And so there's a cost to not doing it on the front end as well.
John Olszewski Jr. is the Democratic candidate for Baltimore County Executive. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. We're going to take your calls and comments a little bit later. You can join us now if you'd like on Facebook Live, where we are streaming our conversation on the WIPR Facebook page. Baltimore Sun had an editorial a couple days ago saying that the county is at or near its capacity for both capital borrowing and operating support for schools. And they note that the county's property tax rate and the piggyback income tax rate haven't changed at all in 29 years for the income tax and 24 years for the piggyback tax. I mean, that's a long time without a tax increase. I think there are other jurisdictions around the state that would be quite envious of that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the residents of Baltimore County are quite pleased with that. Mm-hmm. But is it feasible? Is it viable to maintain, you know, the same level of taxation in those two areas now with these aspirations for new schools and the other programs that you've talked about in the campaign?
The only way we can find out is by trying. And so that starts by being transparent. That's why I think it's important that we actually put our budget online. You know, in Baltimore County, in the last 2 years, we've had two people total testify on our county budget. And I don't know if that's because they felt like it didn't matter or they didn't know about it. But I'd be an executive that put seven budget hearings through each council district before I submitted a budget. And so making that information available so people can see where their money is coming in and how it's being spent is job number one. But then it's also incumbent upon good leaders to do that other work of identifying the efficiencies, engaging in the partnerships, prioritizing our spending, growing our county. Because at that point we can say, you know, here's 100% of what I want to accomplish. Maybe in doing all of that work, we can get to 60% of it. The other 40% we can't afford on our current path. And then you can have an honest conversation with people. Look, I think people work hard for their money. The last thing we want to do is raise taxes. I say it should be the last option we consider. And I have a record of that in the legislature of being someone who invests in our priorities, whether it's identifying casino revenues to help support education, supporting budgets year in and year out, that invested in public safety and our education system. But I also voted against the sales tax increase that took money out of working families' pockets and was regressive. And I voted against or supported, opposed efforts to raise the tolls that were hit our hardworking families. And so I recognize that that give and take. But the first step, I think, is really just being honest about where we are, making that information public, and then really working backwards to try to meet those priorities as best we can without raising taxes.
Back in February, the Spending Affordability Committee of the Baltimore County Council issued their annual report and raised some red flags. I mean, they talked about the danger of falling short in, number one, paying off the debt, and number two, saving what the county traditionally saves to use for various projects. You're talking about, just with education, about a $2 billion price tag. That's the number that people are throwing around. Is that an accurate number when you run your numbers?
So we believe, yeah, it could be up to $2 billion to fully meet both the replacement needs as well as the renovation needs and the remaining overcrowding concerns. Just yesterday, I was touring Johnny Cake Elementary School, and it's a school that's 120% overcrowded, yet it's not anywhere on the county's current agenda. And as people think about, where am I going to live, those are considerations that parents will make. And so we have to figure out a way. And again, like I said, I think engaging in state partnership and having the state be a meaningful partner, but also having the county step up, it will require hard choices, but that's why we're running, so that we can have these conversations and be transparent with people about where we're going.
Are you at all concerned about maintaining the county's very stellar AAA bond rating? I mean, what's the pitch to the people who set the bond rates when you're talking about expanding not only the building part of it, the capital part of it, but you're also talking about giving pretty substantial pay raises to teachers, hiring more psychologists and social workers in each school, all of which is, you know, laudable and aspirational, probably on both sides of the aisle, you know. Mm-hmm. However, when you're in the meeting with the bond folks, what do you tell them?
So I say, look at my record, and that we've always, in my experience, I've always put forward the resources to match the priorities that we have. And so, you know, I'm a big supporter of voluntary universal pre-K. I think the research is clear on the benefits, and I actually sort of come into the Dr. Nancy Grasmick school of investing in early on, that if we had to choose, and if we didn't have additional resources, that we're better off making that investment on the first year of school, those earliest grades, so that all children have the best start possible, as opposed to that last 12th year. In my experience as a teacher, I've seen students who were either in college at, you know, the community college half a day, or on work release, or taking a bunch of electives they didn't necessarily need. And so in many ways, we could almost reprioritize where we're going. And the same could be true for our school construction. So in Baltimore County, for example, we spent $300 million on a student one-to-one laptop program. And while I support creative use of technology in our classroom and think our students should be exposed to that, particularly at the middle school and high school levels, I do have some questions about what the research says at the elementary level. Giving kids laptops is less important, or it doesn't matter as much if they are in schools that aren't air-conditioned, have brown drinking water, are literally sinking into the ground. So it's a Maslow's hierarchy of needs, too. So it's about getting our priorities right. And
what's the state's role in this? Because Mr. Hogan and Mr. Jealous are also talking about universal pre-K and, you know, whether it can be afforded. Mr. Jealous is proposing, free college tuition for folks as well. The Baltimore City does it kind of on its own. There are other counties that do it with a little help from the state. Where do you see the state playing into this, and the feasibility, the probability that the state would be amenable to a proposal to help fund it?
So the only constitutional duty outlined for members of the General Assembly is to fully fund education. And I think it's a defining issue that separates me from my opponent in this race. You know, I've consistently supported budgets that fund education and efforts to increase that funding, while he opposed those same budgets while he was in the House and voted against the landmark Thornton legislation that is actually still not enough to meet our need, but has been sort of foundational in moving our schools ahead. And so I think that the role of the state can't be understated. As we think about the Thornton Commission and their conversations about how we've underinvested from the state perspective, as they explore and support ideas about things like universal pre-K, as we contemplate actually having what was, I thought, should have been the intention all along of this constitutional amendment of the lockbox for casino revenues, the constitutional question, which I support.
And that'll be on the ballot in November.
I hope people will vote for question one and Johnny Olszewski for county executive. But the role is critical, and I'm glad to see that our state leaders are taking a serious look at this because, you know, when teachers are making 84 cents on the dollar compared to other states, when we recognize that education is the great equalizer, it's really the one investment across the board that really makes our communities thrive, increases our property value, and grows our county. And growth in economic development is what we need most here in Baltimore County.
Former Delegate Johnny Olszewski Jr., he's the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Johnny O., and we'll take your questions and comments at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org to send us a tweet at @midday WYPR, and you can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming from Studio A. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on Monday's show, a special exhibition at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture is called Hateful Things. It's a collection of artifacts from the Jim Crow era that dehumanize people of color. Dr. Lester Spence of Johns Hopkins University and Renee Myers, the recently appointed Vice President of Inclusion Strategy at Netflix, join me to talk about the roots of racism and efforts to reclaim racial stereotypes. That's coming up on Monday here on Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Johnny O., John Olszewski Jr. He is the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. He's running against Republican Al Redmer in the November election, which is right around the corner, 50-something days. You are welcome to join our conversation at 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @midday WYPR, to follow me on Twitter. I'd be grateful for that, @TomHallWYPR, and you can catch us on the WYPR Facebook page where we are streaming. Mr. Olszewski, let's go to the phones. We have Joe in Baltimore County. Welcome to Midday with Johnny O.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing great.
Hey, yeah. I had read an article in the Baltimore Sun, and I wanted to ask what your plan or strategy for school safety is. When I read that you have an NRA-approved voting record allowing assault rifles in Maryland and for domestic abusers to have firearms. Thank you.
All right. The NRA business came up in the primary as well, and you had two of your three opponents going back and forth about who was tougher on the NRA. Mm-hmm. The first thing, before you answer the caller's question, what is the capacity of the Baltimore County Executive to affect anything having to do with gun regulation in the county?
It's extremely limited, but I think that as this issue came up before, you know, I have a responsibility as county executive to make sure that every family is safe and every child is safe. And so I think that means that we lobby for sensible gun laws at the state and national level, which is really where that takes place. Actually, I want to give a nod to one of my former opponents, Councilwoman Allman, who did put forward one small tweak that actually was able to be made at the county level in terms of restricting access to firearms to minors from adults. And actually, I've said consistently that, you know, I do support common sense regulation of firearms, and, you know, good leaders can say where we need to go and acknowledge that they were wrong in the past. I actually supported, went and testified in favor of the councilwoman's legislation, and recently was honored to have her support in recognition of not just my candidacy, but I think particularly a lot of the places where we share values in terms of gun safety, but also in terms of education. And one of the places where she was a real leader, and I look forward to working closely with her and others, is the student, is the school resource officer program. And as we think about issues of school safety, you know, again, I'd be the first person elected county executive who spent time in the classroom and understands just how important school safety is. We have a lot. This gets to the overcrowding issue. We have trailers that are very, quite frankly, are soft targets because they aren't sort of within the confines of the school safety investments that we've made and the improvements we've made. So we have to address that. We have to continue to make those investments to keep our schools safe. And I do think that the SRO program is one of those great investments that we make to have not just a safer school environment, but also that school resource officers are real assets for our school beyond the safety and security piece. I mean, in my experience, Officer Ray, she was amazing. She was not just someone who helped keep discipline in the school, but she became a trusted liaison to students that changed their dynamic with the police department. And she was even a coach of Step Squad, and so really became an integral part of the entire school community.
Violence reduction is something that is on the minds of many county residents. I mean, you've had just in the last couple of weeks two terrible incidents. One, a shooting at a funeral. Mm-hmm. A man was attending the funeral of his brother, and he was himself shot to death. And then there was a 25-year-old woman who evidently had witnessed a shooting in Towson. She was also shot to death. That obviously seems like a clear cut example of witness intimidation. I mean, the charges haven't been filed yet. We don't know mm-hmm. what that is. But does this point to a need for more and different levels of regional cooperation when it comes to violence?
Yeah, I mean, any person who's lost is one.
And what would that
one,
look like?
One too many. Yeah, any person lost is one too many. Fortunately, in Baltimore County, our numbers have actually been pretty low in terms of homicides. I do have some concerns about violent crime rates that have been on the rise recently here in Baltimore County. But we both need to invest more in our public safety here in Baltimore County. Everything from actually hiring more officers, but also giving them the tools and the equipment and the IT and the software to be successful in their jobs, having enough support staff so that they can engage in true, meaningful community policing where they are on the streets, meeting with community members, understanding the unique needs and challenges of every community. But it's also that important need of investing in the upstream issues that really impact crime, right? So I want to create, for example, in Baltimore County, a youth summer works program so that we partner with the private sector to put our young people to work similar to what Baltimore City does. Having more PAL centers, making our recreational programs top-notch. These all flow into our public safety issues. And then similarly, we do have to absolutely be more regional in our thinking, not just in transportation or economic development. Those are important tools. And frankly, I think ultimately impact criminal justice. But public safety is the third area where we can and should and must be partnering. Data sharing is one very clear example of having an understanding of the issues that officers on either side of the line are coming into.
Is it being done now in a sufficient, effective way?
I don't think so. I think that we can do much better, both in terms of actually sharing the data, using it to be more proactive and understand where the hotspots are likely to be, and let our officers sort of collaborate cross-jurisdictionally, because we do share an awful lot of border with Baltimore City.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is the Democratic candidate for Baltimore County Executive. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Our number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet at @MiddayWYPR. You can catch us on Facebook on the WYPR Facebook page. Got a couple of emails from both Jack and Craig who say, recently developer influence in Baltimore County has been a topic of discussion. How will you ensure that county residents have a seat at the table when it comes to development decision? This whole notion of pay to play, one of your opponents in the primary, Jim Brochin, was a real centerpiece of his campaign. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about that now that the dust has settled from that election?
I mean, I'm committed to making community-led governing the hallmark of an administration, and that is done, I think, both on the campaigning side and also on the governing side. So I was then and am still the only candidate who has called for public financing of our elections for county executive and county council candidates. It's a way that can take all special interest money out of our electoral process. It's how our governor was elected. It's how the Democratic nominee for county executive in Montgomery County was nominated, as well as all the at-large Democrats there. Howard County has a system they're about to put in place. Baltimore City recently voted for a system. So there's no reason we shouldn't be able to have that here in Baltimore County.
I don't know the answer to this, but have you accepted money from developers for this campaign?
I'm proud that we have a very diverse set of supporters, from the business community to individuals to small businesses. We welcome the support of everyone, but it's been overwhelmingly diverse, and so no one influence has had undue and outweighed in terms of supporting our campaign.
I'll take that as a yes.
But, the other piece, just really quickly, is about the governing piece and having more information online, working with the council to move work sessions to the evening, and you know, really making the government more transparent in how we operate, and community-led development so the community actually has a meaningful seat at the table.
Let's try to get another phone call in here. James from Baltimore County, welcome to Midday with Johnny O.
Yes, awesome to speak with you today, Johnny O.
Hey, James.
I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to ask you these questions that many of my other neighbors are also talking about as we speak. My question today to you is, will you be able to explain the benefits of a $15 an hour minimum wage to working families and small businesses and how that boosts our economy?
All right. Thanks for that call, James. The $15 minimum wage, you support that as a county initiative?
So I think first of all, I do support the minimum wage generally. I believe that it sustains families. It helps prevent the need for public assistance programs that we've seen. The United Way report that came out recently that basically suggests that, you know, the vast majority of families in the greater Baltimore metropolitan area are really asset limited and really constrained. And so we have to make sure that as people are working full-time jobs, they can provide for their family. I do prefer to see the minimum wage pass at the state level so that Baltimore County as a jurisdiction wouldn't be held at a disadvantage. And so I do support the wage increase, but would prefer to see the state act on it next legislative
session.
Catherine
Pugh faced this here in Baltimore City. The council here in Baltimore City passed a $15 minimum wage bill, which she vetoed. Is there a movement, first of all, to introduce a $15 minimum wage bill from the Baltimore County Council? And if you're elected and it passes, would you sustain it?
I'm not aware of it. I think that the prudent first step, and maybe this is the policy wonk in me, is that we, you know, if that were something that the council were interested in pursuing locally, that we should, to be prudent, to actually study the impact locally, because I think what happens if you do it in a jurisdiction is very different than what happens at the state level. But if the state fails to act, we should at least consider what that impact would be so that we can have those honest conversations about what the reality and what the impact would be.
A couple more comments on Facebook and on email about schools. Lisa says every community deserves good quality schools, but that means more than just good facilities, which seems to be the focus right now. The quality of education shouldn't be determined by where you live. Do you believe that we have an equity issue in Baltimore County public schools? And if so, how do you plan to address equity issues? And then Jennifer emails, said, I just read an article in Towson Times that reports more than 800 residential housing units will be created in the downtown Towson area. With the schools already overcrowded, where will all these families go to school? I appreciate you're wanting to build more high schools, so I'm wondering if the companies who are building these residential facilities are contributing to funding toward the building or improvement of schools in the area. If funding from them was not promised, will you consider asking? Is that the kind of thing that a developer can be approached with to say, okay, you want the infrastructure for your new apartment complex or your new bunch of homes? You're going to need to pony up some money for the other kinds of things that are going to be needed for these families.
I mean, you can certainly ask, and I want to engage the private sector generally in the work that we do. It's what I did as a legislator in terms of nationally recognized job training programs or working with the Port of Baltimore. But in terms of impact fees, that's something that would have to actually be enabled by the state legislature first and then considered by the council. One of the challenges in Baltimore County is that it would both the question is, because we've declined in so much in terms of the number of permits that we issue and new buildings that are issued relative to where we were 5, 10, 20 years ago, that change would not yield a significant amount of revenue as it might have done 20 years ago in Baltimore County. Whereas we might be issuing 600 permits a year now, we were doing thousands of permits in years prior. But what I can say is that we do need to make sure that we're addressing not just the overcrowding, and part of that is making sure that we're building schools that are adequately sized and we're predicting school enrollments. You know, we built a new high school over in Dundalk High School and Sellers Point Technical, and within a couple of years of it being open, we had trailers already added, and that's just unacceptable to me when you spend that kind of money on schools to not fully meet the needs of our communities. Equity is a passion of mine. We need to do more to promote it, not just in our schools, but across county government. And in terms, one of the ways that we do that is recognize that we need to boost and beef up our staffing within our schools. So in Baltimore County, we're anywhere from 2 to 10 times behind the national recommendations for support personnel, like pupil personnel workers and psychologists and social workers. And so we have to make sure we're also making those investments to support our students who come from varying backgrounds. And one of the great models that's a pilot currently at Lansdowne High School is this community school model, where we actually go in and identify the unique needs and challenges of a community and bring together those resources, whether it's job training or English language learning classes or health services, and actually meeting the needs not just of the student but also of the parents, and sort of more holistically engaging the student in that way.
Speaking of all the new housing in Towson and elsewhere in the county, as I talk to you and your opponent, Mr. Redmer, it seems that one of the places that you are very, very, you have very, very different opinions about is affordable housing. How much it there should be, where it should be located, how it gets funded. The county is under a consent decree from HUD to make available more so-called moving to opportunity areas for people to live in, relocating from places like Baltimore City and elsewhere. But for affordable housing in Towson, in northern Baltimore County and eastern Baltimore County, what do you think?
Well, just to be clear, the consent decree doesn't actually increase the number of vouchers. This isn't about, we actually have a affordable housing crisis and shortage within Baltimore County for our Baltimore County residents. And so, you know, I am committed to enforcing what we've already committed to. Unlike my opponent, who wants to file suit against the federal government and waste potentially millions of dollars of taxpayer money in the court system on a court case that we will lose, as it relates to the actual agreement, I think that having an incentive fund that partners with the private sector to make sure that we have quality affordable housing, so that people, as they are actually working and being productive members of society, is a good thing. And similarly, there's another piece about housing discrimination. I think discrimination in any form is wrong. It's the same arguments that we're hearing today that were used 10, 20, 50 years ago about discriminating based on color or one's gender or one's religion. And it was wrong then. It's wrong now. It's something that I'll fight to change as county executive.
How about the concentration of it? Melissa writes in on Facebook Live that the county is encouraged to uphold the promise of building low-income housing, but what will you do to not concentrate it in the area of the county from which you come? Essex, Dundalk, Middle River. I'd like to see it more spread out, she says.
I'm actually thrilled that she asked the question, because that's actually the entire intentionality of the agreement, is that we're not concentrating further areas that already have it. What we've seen is that over time, we've gotten southeast and western Baltimore County have been asked to shoulder the entire burden of affordable housing and vouchered housing. And so what we're trying to do is actually deconcentrate vouchers, deconcentrate poverty, so that no community across Baltimore County has a concentration, and that all communities can thrive, and individuals living within those communities, whether they are living in an affordable unit or not, can be successful.
But do you expect opposition to subsidize housing, affordable housing, in places that currently doesn't have much of it or any of it at all?
I think if you can articulate and actually walk people through what it means, there's much less opposition than you might otherwise think. You can look, again, some of the most affluent jurisdictions in the state of Maryland, Howard County, Montgomery County, both have similar requirements and do have legislation that has ended housing discrimination. And they have found a way to integrate affordable units in a way that no community, and that's sort of the point, right? We want to deconcentrate poverty. We don't want to have any community in Baltimore County be asked to have an oversaturation of concentrated poverty or concentrated affordable housing. And that's exactly what we're trying to accomplish. And failing to do so will doom communities to failure if we are unable to deconcentrate those pockets that currently have it.
Johnny O, John Olszewski Jr., is the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. His opponent in the November election is Republican Al Redmer Jr., who's currently the State Insurance Commissioner. We will have more with Johnny O when we come back after a quick break. 410-662-8780. That's our number. Our email, midday@wypr.org, to drop us a tweet @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page, where we are streaming our conversation here from Studio A. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being with us. Stick around. Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, my guest today, John Olszewski Jr., otherwise known as Johnny O. He is the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. He's a former state delegate and a former public school teacher. The Republican nominee for Baltimore County Executive is the State Insurance Commissioner, Al Redmer Jr. The general election is Tuesday, November 6th. Early voting begins in 41 days on October 25th. Baltimore County is the third largest jurisdiction in the state. The county executive manages a $3.5 billion annual budget. To join our conversation with Johnny Olszewski Jr., our number 410-662-8780, our email midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle @MiddayWYPR. You can also catch us on the WYPR Facebook page. Let's try to get a couple more calls in here, Mr. Olszewski, if we can. Tina in Baltimore County, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. I love the program, so thank you. A lot of people talk about improving education, and I'd like to ask Johnny O what he brings to the table as a former teacher dealing with real kids, real communities, real schools, real problems. And I'd also add quickly, I did meet a former student of his who spoke so highly, and he said he broke things down, and he was like a mentor to him. But my question is, what do you, Johnny O, bring to the table as a former teacher that other people don't?
And by the way, Tina, are you yourself in the education business?
I used to. I am a former teacher. I am one of many.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, thanks.
Who is a former teacher.
Great. Well, thanks for that call. When it comes to a resume, this is an executive position. You've held legislative office. Mm-hmm. You've been in the public schools, as Tina mentions, and as everybody knows. How do those things, those particular experiences, inform your capacity as an executive, running a business?
Well, in addition to my experience as an educator and having that real experience of understanding what happens when there are box fans whizzing in the background because there's not air conditioning, or a student hasn't had a meal, or, my first year as a teacher, we had to put a piece of plywood on the ground because our trailer had a hole in it. A trailer that, by the way, over 10 years later, that's temporary, is still there today. And what that has given me is an urgency of now, someone who understands that every year that we put kids in a less than acceptable condition is unacceptable, because we shortchange our kids every day and every year that we don't have them in that role. I can tell you that having been in the legislature, I've worked closely with several county executives across the state. I've worked with governors. I've helped since I was a young kid. Actually, I've helped my grandparents run their small business. I've been in the private sector now for the last 3 years. I know what it takes. But really good executives make sound decisions and they build good teams. And ultimately, that's what you want for an executive, is someone that has the vision to lead and who will build a strong team around them. And that's what they'll get from me in that role, with the added bonus of actually having lived the experience of what I think is the most important issue in Baltimore County. 53 cents of every dollar we spend goes to our school system. So having someone who has that expertise and that experience, I've also been a member of the Baltimore County School
Board. Is that the right proportion? Should it be higher? Should it be lower? 53%. I mean, is that good, bad, or indifferent?
It should be whatever requires to meet the need. And I don't think we're meeting the need currently, but that doesn't necessarily just mean more money or a bigger percent. The biggest thing is about meeting the need.
I have a question on email from Matt in Dundalk, who says, what can you do about the massive amount of truck traffic in Dundalk now because of the port and Trade Point Atlantic? We need a solution. I have a question about Trade Point Atlantic, and that concerns TIFs. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation now about tax incremental financing for Trade Point Atlantic. They want to expand. They want infrastructure improvements paid for by the county in return for tax consideration. What's your thought, number one, about the density of the traffic being caused by the expansion of Trade Point Atlantic, and what about future expansion? How should it be paid for?
Sure. So two things on the traffic. First of all, this goes back to sort of community-led development and community-led engagement, and that's what they'll get from me as county executive. I'll have at least a team of one community outreach liaison for every single council district, which is more than what we're doing now, a team that's reflective of our county's diversity. But also, one very specific thing's over in the southeast part of Baltimore County is we actually charge people, including trucks, to do a turnaround at the Francis Scott Key Bridge, because there's only one exit off of Browning Highway, which is a major thoroughfare for a truck activity. And so that's a very tangible way where if we can work with the Maryland Transit Administration, or sorry, the Maryland Department of
Transportation
to make that not a paid thing, to effectively just do a turnaround on Browning Highway, I think will help address some of that traffic congestion. But we also have to engage in long-term planning and conversations with the community about other issues. As it relates to the TIF, I was proud of my work as a legislator who firsthand helped transform the steel plant. Unfortunately, I saw what happened as it closed growing up. I saw the negative impacts of industry moving away in southeast Baltimore County. It's a big reason why I ran for office, and so I was proud to be part of reversing those decades of decline to help pave the way for the economic transformation that's happening there. I think that if there is a site in Baltimore County that is eligible for serious consideration of that kind of public-private partnership to drive those thousands of jobs that are on the horizon in here, it is Trade Point Atlantic. I understand that Baltimore County is currently engaging in an economic development and feasibility study because the takeaways for me is that when we engage with public sector dollars and private projects, there have to be first and foremost a good deal for taxpayers. We have to make sure that the benefit is going to outweigh the costs. But inclusive of that should be very clear benefits for the community, negotiated with the community. We should be looking at things like hiring locally and engaging our local community in ways that benefits them meaningfully and directly.
Johnny Olszewski Jr. is running for Baltimore County Executive. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Midday. Let me talk a little bit about politics. People have said that you are a progressive. Do you accept that label? And if so, are you a progressive in the mold of Ben Jealous and other progressives around the state, several of whom have just been elected to the Maryland Senate? What do you think?
I mean, I'm less interested in labels and more interested in just getting things done for people. And so I'm proud of my record of leading on things like earned sick leave here in Maryland and fighting for, at the state level, the increase to the minimum wage. I was deciding vote for marriage equality, and I'm an environmental champion. I'm someone who's always fought for working families. Voting against things like increases to the sales tax, as I mentioned earlier, and the increases to the tolls, pushing against those. So I've always just sort of been a common sense legislator who's worked across the aisle to get things done. You know, when I was chairman of the Baltimore County House delegation, for example, it's a 21-member delegation that goes from the most liberal to the most conservative. It's the one time Pat McDonough has to admit that he voted for me 4 years in a row along with the rest of the delegation. So for me, it's always
been a very conservative Republican delegate.
Yeah, and my opponent's opponent in the primary. But, you know, at the end of the day, what really mattered to me was results. And so I'm passionate about a lot of my policy positions, but ultimately it's less about label and more about results. And so
your opponent, speaking of him, has chided you for not publicly endorsing Ben Jealous.
Well, I can tell you that I am a Democrat who supports Democrats from the top to the bottom of the ticket. But unlike my opponent, I am focused wholly on this race for county executive. There are any number of issues that we should be tackling, from our school infrastructure to our environment to campaign finance reform. And, you know, I don't call this race a hobby, unlike my opponent. I don't tell people I have other priorities other than this race, as my opponent has at our most recent debate. My only priority is serving the people of Baltimore County. And in doing so, look, I will stand up to either person who's in that role. I do believe that Democrats, again, from the top to the bottom, best reflect the values of working families and environmental protection, investing in our schools. But this is a race for Baltimore County Executive. And if my opponent wants to talk about the governor's race, maybe he should be running for governor. Or maybe there's a record here he doesn't want to talk about as it relates to this race.
Speaking of the governor and education, your opponent has pledged, or at least he did as of last spring, and I'll get a chance to talk to him about it more next week when he's here, to create an inspector general office for Baltimore County schools. This mm-hmm. is another proposal that Governor Hogan has proposed for the entire state to have an inspector general that oversees sure. the whole state. What's your feeling about that proposal?
Well, I actually called for something very similar. I believe we came out at the same time. I had called for giving independent authority to our auditor, which already exists and doesn't require the creation of a new office. So, you know, I'm trying to be fiscally responsible as best we can and just giving that additional authority to an infrastructure that's already in place so that if there are concerns, and I'd charge that office to do that full sweep of efficiency and waste and abuse, and I think they'd be equipped to do it much sooner than creating a new office.
We have a minute left. Let me ask you to reflect briefly on the experience of winning this primary by such a close margin. I mean, four people in the race mm-hmm. took about 18 days to figure out that you had won by 17 votes. What do you think of that? What have you learned from that experience?
I am honored and humbled to be here, first and foremost, and grateful for my friends and family and supporters who've been with me throughout this process. As a government civics teacher who taught my students every day to register to vote, that every vote counts, I was honored to be part of such a historic election that affirmed that. And so if there's one takeaway is that please get engaged in the process, get out to vote, because your vote truly does matter and it makes a difference and has significant impacts on our communities.
John Olszewski, Jr., known as Johnny O. Mr. Olszewski, it's always good to see you, and we look forward to having you back in just a few weeks with Mr. Redmer, and we'll continue this conversation about the issues affecting Baltimore County.
Looking forward to it, Tom. Thanks so much.
John Olszewski, Jr. is the Democratic nominee for Baltimore County Executive. His opponent in the November election is Maryland's Insurance Commissioner, Republican Al Redmer, Jr. Mr. Redmer will be my guest here on Midday next week. On Wednesday and next month on the 22nd of October, both Mr. Olszewski and Mr. Redmer will join me here in Studio A for the hour. That conversation will take place just a couple of weeks before Election Day, November 6th. Early voting begins on October 25th. This has been another in our series of conversations with the candidates. You can catch all of the conversations in this series at our website, wypr.org/midday, or by subscribing to our podcast. That's it for us today. Coming up on Monday's show, Reclaiming Racial Stereotypes, a discussion with Dr. Lester Spence of Johns Hopkins University and Vernay Meyer, who directs inclusion strategy at Netflix. That's coming up Monday on Midday. We want to thank Bottoms Up Bagels for providing lunch today. Bottoms Up Bagels is a small batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses. Inspired by traditions of bagel making dating way back to the 1940s, they're available at the Waverly and JFX Farmers Markets, and of course online at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday's director and engineer is Luke Spicknall. Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, and Kathleen Cahill produce the program. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer. Austin Coghlan from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. I'm Tom Hall. On behalf of all of us here at Midday, we appreciate your listening. Have a great weekend.